Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Saxon Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Andrew on the board, and it's chilly and going to be freezing rain Wednesday morning. SP futures are down 27. NASDAQ futures down 179. This is after a pretty good update yesterday. They have Alphabet and AMD earnings. We've got Alphabet. I've got Alphabet Google down $14. It's almost 7%. The straddle was about 10 or 11. I tried to do a spread in there. Thank God I did not. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning. Yes, you do.
In a minute, Kevin, I'm going to have to give you a very bad insult that was passed on to me to give to you.
Oh, let's hear it.
You're not going to like it.
I'll get over it.
Kevin has turned into one of your most rational and most thoughtful conservative, not like the other nut jobs.
Okay, I'll work on that. I'll see if I can get back to nut jobs.
I mean, they thought you'd be very upset with that.
Well, I work real hard on being a nut job, so I am disappointed, but mostly in myself.
Anyway, so that was good. I talked to one of our old ND dudes. Anyway, I was talking about the straddles. I'll go through this real briefly again. I've done it before. When you have, especially an earnings day, which is, again, none of your models predict stuff like earnings, because all your capital asset pricing models, your option models, all assume a steady stream of information that affects option pricing, affects stock pricing, those kinds of things. And we all know that that's not the case. I mean, if there's a labor number, that's a number, like this Friday. There's a Fed announcement, that's not a normal day, and certainly a earnings day is not a normal day. And when you look at, and I think there's a lot of reasons for this, is that if Trump would put me in a spot to do something about it, I'd sure as hell do something about it, but they're not going to do that. Anyway, some of it's market fabric, so your earnings come out, you know, usually the night before or the morning of, but essentially not where nobody's trading. There's people that trade all night. I know that now. But I think when I first started, Kevin, well, it's a long time ago, but I think they would, like, the earnings would come out like at 10 o'clock and the stock would, like, stop trading for an hour. And at least some of the stocks. And then you'd have your earnings, then you'd have maybe the phone call and all the other stuff. It would reopen at 11, like, when everybody was sort of here. And you had you had the specialist with his, with all the stock that people are willing to sell and buy at all the different prices and stuff. Well, now, for some reason, they try and do this at a time when, like, the least amount of people are around. It's not like there's nobody, because, I mean, there's people. None of my clients are trading at 4 in the afternoon. They're not going to stick their neck out for the bidding Google or something. So, the straddle, when you look at the call and the put, say the stock's trading 100. You look at if the 100 call is $5 and the 100 put is $5, you add those two together, and you say, okay, if I buy the both of them, stock needs to go more than $10 for me to make money, correct? If I sell them, if it doesn't go $10, I make money. Well, most people, and I would never naked sell anything for anybody, none of my clients, most people really are reluctant or are prohibited from selling naked options. If you had enough money to buy the stock, technically the put sale is not a naked option, it's a cash secured put, but let's not go there, even though I just did. But generally, if you took a long period of time, maybe on a slight edge, you would say the edge would go to the sellers, because not all the people in the game can be a seller. But anyway, over a period of time, the respect you get for, quote, the market is how good the market is. If the straddle's $6, seems like an awful lot of times it moves $6, or they're at least pretty close. Lately, in the last couple of years, I've said this a few times because I do these earnings plays, and I do spreads around earnings, and we've had 2, 3, 3.5 times straddle. IBM last week, the straddle was, I think, $12. I was trying to get a spread out of there, and I didn't get it. They moved 30. But this stuff is unheard of for stocks like IBM and those kinds of things. Now, this Google isn't bad. I had the straddle yesterday, I think, at $12, and it's down 14. But some of this stuff, I think the Palantir, I have a client who is bullish in Palantir, right? Stock's trading 80. He does the 90 spread, which is what, 14% higher? Stock's 102. So the guy's bullish as all get out, and he's down dough. I mean, the stock, I think the straddle is probably $7, and it tripled it. So somewhere between market lack of dynamics, you know, these maybe the companies aren't giving out the information early enough, or the people that come out on the air. I mean, we're talking about a stock, this Palantir, with 180 times earnings, 175 times earnings. They were just the strove of people that come on CNBC afterward talking about, oh man, a stock could be 200, it could be 250, it's unbelievable. What do you mean it could be? It could be 800, it could be 10,000. It's reaching some sort of an insanity level here, Kevin. It's crazed. I mean, you saw what was going on with Bitcoin the other day, $15,000 move in one day on something that's worth nothing. I mean, what do you make of this? I mean, you just hear about it more on the show.
Well, I actually, it's not what I make of it as much as I have a question, is do you think this kind of volatility is going to be situation normal for a while, or is it likely to settle into some kind of equilibrium is the word that comes to mind, but I'm not sure that would be the right word to use. But are we going to settle into some kind of price range for all this stuff that at least, whether it's rational or not, at least is consistent?
I think that someday, somehow, you always get down to the basics, and boy, when that's going to happen, to where, okay, what is this company really going to make in terms of earnings, and am I ever going to get a piece of it? Sort of like you're buying a six flat. I mean, you know, you're paying $100,000 for the place and it makes $10,000 a year. Guess what? It's a 10% return, right? Some place, whenever you get these different changes in technology, you did it with railroads, you did it with TVs, radio, where you really can't put a price on how much. There's always going to be people. We did this with the internet. How many click-throughs? We did it with China. Oh man, if you're going to China, there's 1.5 billion people there. You can't even imagine how much you're going to make. We did it with the cloud. I mean, you were fortunately on the shoulder, and that was able.
Well, actually, I think we're still doing it with the cloud. Still a lot of people buying cloud services.
Yeah, but no. What I'm saying is, when there's a spot where you have no, you can't even put a number on how much it's going to be worth. Where you like AI? Well, how much is NVIDIA of the entire world going to all of a sudden need one of these? You know, big, huge honking chips they charge God knows how much for. I mean, you can't, it's hard to really, certainly hard for me to say, God, people aren't going to buy that many because I don't know that much about it. But someplace, somewhere, every industry, every business, someday, that's what's so much fun about the business, someday they come home to Papa. When I say that, you say, okay, how much money are you making? Am I going to get a cut someday? But when that happens is, you know, eBay is a perfect example. eBay just went up every month for how long? Remember that? I mean, oh, God, everybody's going to sell everything in the world on eBay. I mean, no matter what it is, they were so high up. What's the lady was running it was selling how many shares a month? She knew it was too high. And all of a sudden one day, you know what? They're just another retailer, and now their P/E ratio is normal and like a regular stock. Someday Amazon is going to be just another real retailer, right? But when's the day?
Yeah, they will. And you know, this is the thing. I mean, think of how many conversations you've had with Dan Janinas.
Yeah,
talked about the quality of the management and the vision that they had, and so on. So you know, I'm not sure if when eBay lost out to started really getting its lunch eaten by Amazon. I don't remember if Meg Whitman was, the CEO or not then, but she might have been.
I think she'd already gone over to Hewlett, didn't she, or something?
She might have by then. But it doesn't matter, whoever it is. Does somebody have the vision to see what's going on, not just in what your capabilities are, but in who else is either new to the market, has been in the market, and is emerging, just to see the trends. And, I see things unfolding in a different way, for instance, than Carl does. Not that we're at odds with each other. I just see different things that I think are going to emerge as important technologies, and he sees things, and he sees the pitfalls and pratfalls. But that's what strategy is about, is being able to read where things are going. If they go that way, great. If they don't, you've got your contingency plans. But all in all, you understand your threats, and you understand what's emerging, and you understand when we've sort of tapped out. I give you an example. How long, cable entertainment services, is if you look at Comcast and what they've done over the last few years, they were probably slow to get in, but they aren't selling you. They are totally willing to sell their entertainment packages and their coaxial cable coming into your house. They are totally willing to sell that to anybody who's going to pay, but they're going to charge you a lot of money because what they're really doing is fueling their wireless business. And they understand that as 5G gets built out everywhere, that it's going to render the wire useless. Maybe it's going to kill cable before it's going to kill fiber, but it's probably going to kill it all, and people are going to be able to just do what Matty has been talked about for years when he was on here, going a la carte on there. Well, everybody will be a la carte. It's an incredible number of people who are now, and it's just the way the market has emerged. But if there is, I don't know what Spectrum does, for instance, but I've never seen Spectrum, which is the other big cable provider in the United States. I don't ever see anything about Spectrum selling Spectrum wireless services, telephones and all that. But, if you backed up 5-6 years ago, Comcast was selling bundles, your landline, your internet, your cable. Now they don't sell that. They're all about wireless because that's moving in a new direction. And that's what I'm asking about, is where do you think the market is going? Because it's going to settle in on some technology as it pertains to whether it's AI or something else. It's going to settle into what that is, and that's going to be what lasts for a while.
What do you think is, we'll be a little more specific here, is the earnings came out last night. I'm looking at this Google alphabet. It's always going to be Google to me because the symbol is G-O-O-G, right? These guys, matter of fact, I was... had a conversation with somebody last night, and she was saying, hey, this Google, she's a work-from-home person who helps people out with websites and so forth, and that's how we got into the conversation. And she said, this Google is such a drag. Everything on there now is paid crap. If you don't know how to do it, all you're going to get is a bunch of paid ads. And I said, I saw that myself, that years ago, I don't know what the years were, Kevin, you might... If you search for something, like if you search for a screwdriver, a slotted screwdriver on Google, on the left would be maybe the screwdriver manufacturers and those kinds of things, everything you want to know about a screwdriver. And on the right, they'd have 5 or 6 Ace Hardware, Home Depot. They sort of separated out the paid ads from the other stuff, the search that we were looking for. Now it's all on the one page, and all that comes up is Ace Hardware, but not so much Home Depot, those kinds of places, that it's become inundated with the advertising. But now, look at these guys. They're down $14, 7%. They seem to, whenever the guy comes out and talks, everybody else comes out and gives you the two-bit carny huckster stuff, and the stock races up. Oh, man, we're doing so good. Even though our numbers suck, you wouldn't believe what we're doing in this one area. It's like Apple. Their numbers sucked on phones, but by the way, we're raising prices on our services, so the stock shoots up. But I was talking about Palantir, and I think from memory yesterday, the P.E. ratio is like 160-something. Well, it's Google. You know what it's down to, Kevin? It's down to 38. That's less than Costco. So the veneer is off this company in terms of being
Is, but so here's your question. What was Google selling 10 years ago? What was?
Oh,
what
I bet, but it was almost infinite PE.
The business was search, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Search, and then, of course, their ability to bundle up that data and make money off of the data that they get from people doing searches. What's Google do now? Well, they still do that, and they do Google Cloud, and they do Google Apps, you know, all of the Google bundled, Google Drive, Google, Gmail, all of those. And they're in a ton of businesses. The question is, as technology is emerging, are they in businesses that are going to grow? And I would argue that, you know, maybe they grow the cloud, but they're clearly not the big, you know, they're not Amazon Cloud, they're not Microsoft, they're not, you know, they're not in the ballpark with any of those. So, and it's not that it's a bad service, it's just they don't have share. And, you know, ultimately in technology, at least, and in really probably in any business, it's you have to be profitable, of course. You have to be a well-run company, of course, but it's really all about can you have share?
Well, yeah, because right now the market's telling you these guys are no longer a growth company. I mean, that, well, whenever he says the market's telling you, I always can't stand people do that, and I just did it. Well, that P.E. ratio, like I said, there's retailers out there. Home Depot, I think, is probably higher than 38 on a P.E., you know, which is, so whatever they're doing, what would it cost me if somebody were to, you know, search for Chicago Investment Advisors, how much would it cost me to have PTI, the first name that pops up? What does it even charge?
I don't know. I don't know, but that's paid search, and there are people who would help you do that.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I want to do it because I don't want to be for everybody. Let's put it that way.
That's exactly how Google makes the money. So and everybody does. If you want to use StartPage or DuckDuckGo or something like that, it's the same thing. They make money by putting, you know, handling paid search and putting people at the top. The difference is that some of the competitors, and this is why people have gotten away from Google, is because they not only that, but they capture your activity and they sell that data too, and that's problematic for a whole lot of people. And you know, they do have so much. I mean, the one thing they really have going for them in that regard is that in the Google Apps, you know, Gmail, and I'm a Gmail user, so they have a whole lot of information about, you know, what I do, how I search, because once I'm logged into Gmail, I'm logged into their services. And now if I were to do a Google search, they'd know exactly who I am, and they can profile me, and they can sell my information to companies who would love to know what my profile
should
is.
Should I get a different... I asked this before. I mean, I use Google as well. I got a couple emails there. Should I get a different spot? Because it's actually starting to piss me off. I a building. I found this online firm that sells you... you know, it's, if you're going by yourself to the store and buying something for your place, it's no big deal. But I actually bought filters for like all four units in the place, right? And I had them delivered. I don't usually do stuff like that, but there's an outfit that has all kinds of different kinds of filters, furnace filters, and so they, once in a while, they send me an email reminding me, hey, it's time to buy more filters, right? Well, I opened that up once. Now, every time I even go to CNBC or something, I get an ad from this company popping up in front of my face. I don't want that. I mean, if I use DuckDuckGo,
you can lose an ad blocker. Now, some of them are, you know, the websites are pretty good at sensing that, so most of them are going to come back and say, we see you're using an ad blocker, disable it if you want to see this page. And you can do that at the page level, but... You're playing a constant game of spy versus spy to try and avoid all that kind of crap.
Well, we're going to go to break here in a bit, but the same person I was talking about, we were talking a little bit about after the break, one of our, I won't say friends, but somebody we at least knew, an All-American basketball player my year, passed away this week at a, well, I'm going to consider it an early age because he's the same age as me.
I want to consider
an early age. But he had I don't know his cause of death, but he had blood clot issues.
He also suffered from dementia. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, because I know he'd stopped coaching, but when did he go on the Ring of Fame, Kevin? Was it 4 years? I know I came down to see you for that.
4 years, yeah.
And he seemed okay then, wasn't he? Or wasn't he? I don't know.
He did seem okay. So I don't know. We'll talk more about it.
But anyway, real quickly,
talking about John Shoemaker,
yes.
And I think he's an interesting cat that is worth a little bit of conversation.
Well, the other anecdote, back we'll talk about him, is the person I was talking to yesterday. You know Frank. Well, Frank used to be on the show. Evidently, one day, because Frank talks to everybody, he was in a conversation with Red Shaneditz. Remember that name?
Yeah, sure.
Is he a Hall of Fame manager? I think he is, isn't he?
Yeah, of course he is.
The St. Louis Cardinals. Somehow these two guys are talking, and Frank mentioned the name of Austin Carr. He was a contemporary. His Ren Shaneditz, he said something like, "I love basketball." And Frank said, "Well, when I was in school, you know, Austin Carr was there." So guess what Red Shaneditz said out of the blue? He said, "I remember him. He was the best high school catcher I've ever seen."
Oh, really? That's interesting.
You know, and I talk about it on the show, and it must sound like I'm jealous or something. I'm not, because I played a lot of sports. I enjoy them. I still try to. But the idea that it's sort of like in politics, Kevin, sort of the same way. The idea that you can be one of these people, these generational athletes, unless you've played with one of these people or seen them play or even looked at them, they are so different than the rest of us. I mean, not everybody is.
When you do percentiles, it is many nines after the decimal point.
Yeah, when you see people like Roger Staubach was also starter in basketball and baseball for Navy. I mean, Kenny Hubbs, the guy who died tragically as a Cubs second baseman way back in the 60s, he was a Rookie of the Year. He also was recruited to, Notre Dame basketball, and they still think he's one of the best quarterbacks ever played in Utah. These are all the same people. I mean, when you see and you look at that and you go, I could be one of those guys. No, you can't. No, you can't. You wish we could, okay, but I'd take one of the sports. But, you know, you can't be that fast at one sport and have all the coordination, all of a sudden be horrible in another sport. Not that everybody can hit a baseball, but and if you're a terrific wide receiver at football.
Except for golf, apparently that mystifies a whole lot of people.
Well, because a lot of the sports, I guess every sport you need to be able to run and stuff. Golf is a lower body game, and anybody who's lifted weights and everything and been a football star their whole life, they think it's an upper body game. It's not. So you're going to hit it hard, but you're liable to hit it backwards, right? Basically. Yet again, people who are golfers, they have a totally different body. How many people can almost touch their right elbow to their left shoulder blade, you know? I mean, you look at that and you go, how the hell does anybody swing like that?
Not even when I was in my 20s.
Well, I mean, you look at a swimmer. Not only are they all tall and thin with huge feet, when they go back for the backstroke, they almost disjoint their shoulders, right?
Yeah.
You and I could never do that.
Nope.
Anyway, S&P futures, we finally S&P futures. We're down here, but I think we're up a little bit from where we were. S&P futures down 29, NASDAQ futures down 185. No, we're not. It's right where we were. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years I've seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here.
Right now. Low Drone Banks, Dyson Jacks. I'm Tamara Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 28, NASDAQ Futures down 178. Dow Futures not that far. Dow Futures only down 50. This is due to Alphabet, read Google, down $14 at 7%. We got AMD down $11, which is, it's pushing 9%. We've got Uber is down as well. So we've got all the stuff that were the big earnings last night are all kind of clunking here. And that's essentially the cause of why we're down, I'd say. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 5, call that flat. FTSE up 8, call that flat. CAC down 13, we'll give that a 0.1%. So not much, very, very slow over in the European markets today. Asia, Nikkei down 33, up 33, but that's a flat. 38.831. Hang Seng down 192, that's a full 1%. Still, though, they're over 20,000. 20,597. And Shanghai finally opened up after the Chinese New Year. They're down $21, that's a 0.7%. Kevin, are you, what year are you? This is the year of the snake. Yeah, you gotta know what year you are, bud, or else what good are you? Any? But yesterday,
my guess is that it's the rat.
Oh God! Well, that's all right. I don't think rats bad. S&P futures yesterday was up 43. S&Ps were up 43. Nasdaq was unchanged. Dow was up 134. Yesterday was kind of an odd day. Bonds down 5 basis points, 4.47. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.35. Japan unchanged, 1.28. Oil down 84 cents, 71.86. So we thought the new range was mid-70s. Now it's right back down to the low 70s. So maybe the old range is still around. Brent down 91 cents, 75.29. Natural gas down 6 cents, 3.18. RBOB down 2 cents, 2.06. Gold, which has been on a tear, up $16, 28.91, pushing at this 2,900 level. Silver down a dime, 32.91. Copper unchanged, 4.36. And, boy, I got a lot of investors that are involved in gold and silver. They're in there because they didn't trust the market, but the market's done very well. For a while, they weren't doing so hot, but in the last 6 months, we've got a really big tear in the metals. This has been causing a lot of it. FX, a euro is 104.13. It got down to 102. So the dollar is getting lower now after it was so strong for so long. British pound again up over 125, 125.3. I think it got down to 123, which is a lot. Crypto, which has been all over the block, down, not today, only down $80, 98,610 after its $15,000 run on Monday. Reinforced traffic, weather, sports, Andrew.
All right, it is 6:36 here in Chicago, February 5th. Starting off with a little bit of sports here, just one of our favorite teams. Well, favorite depending on, I guess, how much you like Chicago team's performance.
Oh, but
good. The Bulls won over the Heat, 133-124. Things are not looking as good in the weather today, as we're currently at 26 degrees here in Chicago. We're going to have a high of 34, but we have plenty of winter weather advisories due to some potential slippery ice due to freezing rain later today. Over in Phoenix, they are currently a lot warmer and a lot better. They are at 55 degrees. They have sunshine and plenty of warmth, as they're going to have a high of 79. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic, looks like there is just an accident to report. Label is an accident with injuries. This is on the Edens South before Elson Avenue, reported just 4 minutes ago. Traffic is building, so expect delays up to 10 minutes over there. Other than that, thankfully, the roads are looking all right. So that is all I got.
Well, if you have a car that's designed to be able to hit something at like 50 with all the airbags and stuff, it's your obligation to go 100, so you're going to get injured no matter what.
It only makes sense.
What do you think, Kevin?
I think it does make sense, and so I'm all in on that. Hey, I'm year of the horse, although I'm pretty sure some people would tell you I'm here, you know.
Just one part of the horse?
Only one part of it.
Yes. allegedly, you have to put your year with your lunar sign together to figure out what kind of cat you are. There was a lady who, believe it or not, she used to... I don't know if she's still on Bloomberg. God, it was a long time ago. She would have a trading thing about trading with the stars. Not the stars in Hollywood, but the stars in the sky.
Yeah, the constellations.
Yeah, and she would, the long departed, God, what was the name of the Greek restaurant over in Halstead? What was the name of the, began with a P, Kevin. What was the name of the place?
Parthenon,
yeah. She used to work there on like a Wednesday night. One night we're over there and, of course, my significant other Audrey's all into this stuff, right? So she's reading people's palms, and she's reading Audrey's palm. Audrey couldn't wait to get her palm read, right? And I, of course, want no part of it, right? So Audrey, show her your palm. Show her. Then she grabs my hand. She goes, "Oh, this is very interesting. You have like a double lifeline, or some wrinkle in your hand. Is it your life wrinkle? Is it
your life? Yeah, your lifeline. Yeah.
Oh God. Well, you've got like two of them. Give me my hand back." That was about it for that. But anyway, she was a star. She was traded by the stars. But she said, "Oh no, you got it's your year and your like if you're I'm a." Year of the Dragon, which is evidently one of the better ones because it's the only non-animal of the years, right? Because there is no dragon. Well, there's a little bit of kimono dragon, but... And I'm a Sagittarius. She goes, "Oh, man, I didn't get any better than that." Now, what does that do for me exactly? I don't know. I'm not so sure I've ever won the lottery or anything like that, you know. Just saying.
So is it like a big deal to be a Leo on a horse?
I'd have to ask her.
Yeah, well...
I think Leo's pretty good, right?
Leos are cool.
Yeah. Anyway, Mr. Shoemate.
Okay, so, yeah, Shoemate. So, for the listeners, the way that a sports fan might know John Shoemate, who really doesn't follow Notre Dame basketball, which is a lot of people, Shoe was a... he is the guy who grabbed the final rebound. So you've seen the clip of Notre Dame ending UCLA's record 88-game winning streak. Shoemate is the guy who grabbed that final rebound and heaved it up in the air as time expired. He and that was an epic game between Shoemate and Walton, both of whom have passed within the last few months now.
Yeah.
It was just a battle royale between them. Both of them were first-team All-Americans that year. Really, really good basketball player. So, you know,
Walton was a little taller.
If you were to look in the, and sort of rate Notre Dame basketball players, Shoemate would be somewhere in the top five easily. It's Carr, it's Dantley, and then we can argue over the rest.
Walton was a little taller, quicker, maybe more skilled. Shoemate was 6'9", shoulders about as wide as a door, strong as an axe, and Walton just couldn't handle him physically.
Yeah. So the story behind him is that Shoemate, in those days when he was a freshmen could not play on the varsity in college. So there was a freshman team, and he played on that. And for a lot of reasons, Notre Dame, had, when he was a sophomore, Notre Dame had changed coaches. This young guy, Digger Phelps, came in. The program was really down for a number of reasons, and it was short-term down because they had been good very recently. But, you know, guy losing his leg, someone else going into the ministry and so on. So, there was a lot of reasons, and we could get into that, and that's a whole different story. But Phelps's first year, they had 6 wins. It was 6-20. They were terrible. There were some
only because Era lent him 2 guys from the football team would have been 0-26.
Well, might have been, but yeah, when the football season was over, he was able to he was able to use the Townsends. So they weren't that good, but
they at least were big. They were somebody.
Yeah, they had size and athleticism. Meanwhile, on the freshman team, he had Gary Brokaw, Dwight Clay, Pete Crotty, some nice players. But what was interesting. What had happened is he did have John Shoemate on the roster, but Shoemate had a problem with blood clots. In fact, blood clot infection near his heart, blood clot in his leg. It was bad.
It was life-threatening.
He lost about 50 pounds in the hospital. He was never able to play that year when he would have been a sophomore.
They recruited whoever they were doing the recruiting, because Digger wasn't there. It must have been Johnny D. Recruited John Shoemate out of Elizabeth, New Jersey, mm-hmm. who was a big star. And then he also recruited Sammy Puckett out of Chicago, who was an even bigger star.
That didn't happen either.
Sammy Puckett was here one semester and flunked out. He came from a Catholic high school, too. And allegedly in practice, he was giving Austin Carr more than he can handle. And so he had those two stars coming in. One guy's out and the other guy's in the hospital. Sophomore year, some guy with an automobile accident loses a leg. Another guy joins the Peace Corps. You'd see what kind of... What did Dinger have, like 7 people on scholarship of that?
Yeah, something like that. So it was a bad year. Well, so Shoemate recovered. He built his body back up in a way you might be able to say that it was a blessing that he had his problem. It wasn't, but you could claim that was the impetus for him, you know, building himself up so strong as part of his recovery. At any rate, they come back the next year. And, of course, coming off a year with that kind of losing, your team is not going to come out hot, especially when they were playing a pretty tough schedule early on. But they recovered and wound up the season with a winning record. Not with an invitation to the NCAA tournament, but in those days, the NIT was a really good tournament because the NCAA tournament only had 24 teams in it. They did not allow second-place teams in any conference to play in the NCAA tournament. So all of these other teams, whether it was because you were only the 30th best team or because you were a conference runner-up, a second-place or even a third-place team, they were all in the NIT. So the NIT was a great tournament in its own right. In that tournament, Shoemate wound up being the most valuable player of the tournament. And at one point over a 3-game stretch, he hit 20 consecutive shots. He made 20 consecutive shots. Really good. And in that tournament, Notre Dame made it to the finals. They ran to the finals. They lost the final game on a buzzer beater by a guy named Bobby Stevens, who, you know, I should call him the evil Bobby Stevens, from Virginia Tech. But in that run, they played Louisville. They played North Carolina with George Karl, Bobby Jones on it. So some really good teams as part of that run. And Southern California, I think, had Gus Williams. You know, so it was a really good tournament, and that was the harbinger of things to come. Next year, they had a great season. They ended UCLA's winning streak. They were rated number one for a while. They did get upset in the tournament. I think it was by Michigan.
Dantley had a really crummy game.
Yeah, and Dantley was a freshman on that team. So, you know, that's what you expect when you play freshmen, is sometimes they're going to be not quite ready for prime time as good as he was, as good a player as he was. So at that point, Shoemate could have stuck around for another year, and I think a lot of Irish fans were disappointed that he didn't. And at the same time, when Shoemate decided to leave, Brokaw also left, and he was a first-round draft pick and played in the league for a while, and then wound up being an administrator. I think he was an assistant GM for a long time in Miami or someplace like that. But Shoemate decided to go pro, was a first-round pick, played for, I think, the Buffalo Braves, if I'm not mistaken, who eventually became the Clippers. And had a pretty good career going, and then he had a recurrence of the blood clot problem, and that ended his career. He was a coach. He was a longtime NBA assistant. He was a longtime he was a head coach, like at SMU, as after being a college assistant in a few places.
Well, I can't imagine trying to play a contact sport on blood thinners. I mean,
that could be a problem.
I went to that year.
Well, and they of course are worried about this. You know, you can't detect a blood clot ahead of time unless you're, checking every day, doing X-rays or whatever you have to do every day. So, you know, you worry about them collapsing on the courts.
Well, there was no Eliquis or Xarelto back then, so the only blood thinner, I think, was the rat poison. What's the name of the stuff? It's essentially is rat poison. You have to get tested every couple of weeks, all that stuff. I went to one game that year, Kevin, and we got some good stuff to talk about here today, other than Notre Dame basketball. I went to, you didn't come with, but Bob Golden, who the hell else came with? We went up to Milwaukee, and saw him play the, what were they back then? The Warriors, right? The Marquette Warriors? And I think Marquette won the national championship that year, didn't they?
I don't think it was that year. I don't think they.
But they had a terrific team.
College.
They had a spectacular team,
and they had a long home court winning streak.
Yeah.
And I didn't go with you. I was a senior in high school for that. No, I was a freshman in college.
Yeah.
I went with my hometown honey girlfriend.
Oh God. Well, it was better on your liver, let's just say.
Who was a Marquette student?
Let's say we got there early and found a 2-for-1 bar, and it was a long day.
It probably was.
That game, Marquette led the entire game. That was the one that got Dice Clay, the name of the Iceman. He put
First of all, Andrew Dice Clay was a comedian, an insult comedian. You're thinking Dice Martin, but it wasn't Dice Martin.
No, it was
Dwight Clay.
But they called him after that shot.
He was called the Iceman. Guy who hit the winning shot against UCLA.
Well, he also hit the winning shot against Marquette. It was the only time of the game. The Irish just hung around like 8 points back the whole game. All of a sudden got a couple in, and the only time they were ahead was like 2 seconds left. People at Marquette were like, what the hell just happened? And I'm sitting there going, this is pretty cool. But
anyway. When you go with your Marquette girlfriend, that means you ain't getting any of that.
Huh? Oh, God, no. It was a bad night.
Anyway.
One of the things.
Let me finish up, because if you fast forward, my next encounter with the guy, and you know, we'd see him around campus all the time, play pickup basketball with him at the Rock. At that point, I wasn't playing a lot of basketball because I wasn't good at it. But this was at a game, and he was scouting, I think, for Phoenix at that point. And he was at a Notre Dame game. As I walked in, and I was going to set up shop because I was doing some media work at that point. And so I walked in, and I just stopped and said hello, shake hands, shoot the breeze about, old days in the 70s at Notre Dame. Had a really nice conversation. Then he looks at me and goes, have you met John before? And I said, no. And I turned and looked at him, and the guy sticks out his hand. He says, yeah, I'm John Paxson. He was there with, you know, as the Bulls president, with Gar Foreman scouting as well. So, I'm sitting here having this conversation with Shoemate, and I don't even notice Paxson.
Well, I had a long conversation. He came as a – what was his job before the Bulls? You see, he came to the CBOE for some meeting up in the boardroom for something. I don't know, did he have a regular job before he got back into basketball? That's a long time ago.
Paxson's a very smart guy. And,
yeah.
Not fond of his work as a Bulls GM and then as a Bulls president, but...
I'll tell you what, he's no shrinking dude.
In terms of a guy, though, he was, really pretty...
He's 6'4", 6'5". He's no shrimp. I mean, these guys are they're way bigger than you think they are when you're standing next to them. I mean, he's not a... playing around with all those big guys, you think the guy's 6 feet. He's not. He's pretty big. Paxson. I mean, he's not Shoemate size, but...
Yeah, I think his brother was taller than he was. His brother was like 6'6", but Paxson was 6'2", 6'3", something like that.
Anyway, Kevin, I was saying we were having some discussions back and forth, as you can imagine we do. I just want to touch on a couple of these things, but it is interesting in this day of... I was going to say Twitter, of X and stuff, where people get all kinds of, different information in different places. And, of course, if it spits out for a while, if it was on left-wing TV, it got out there and everybody believed it. Now it seems like some stuff on right-wing TV gets out there and people all believe it. But it never ceases to surprise me, Kevin, an area that I generally know nothing about. There are a lot of areas. And, people say I'm a smart guy. Well, I must be, because all I know is how much I don't know. I never think that I know enough stuff, because I don't. I mean, so somehow we get on this subject with Carl the other day regarding the fentanyl stuff. And, all kinds of people now are experts on the border and all this other kind of crap. And no, you're not. So I dig into it. I find this site. I can't believe there's sites like this. There's a site from the U.S. government, centerfordisease.gov. And I'm thinking, how many... overdoses do we have in this country? What's the historical number? And I'm going to say, like the dummy that I am, if you'd asked me, Kevin, how many overdoses we have per month, I probably would have said 5,000 or something. And so I'm looking here, because Trump's jumping up and down on this fentanyl thing, which I don't really want fentanyl coming to the country, so I'm not going to go crazy with the dude on that one, but. I dig into this thing, and when Trump took office, now again, this is not his fault. When Trump took office in January 2017, we got 65,000 overdoses a month. I would never have dreamed of that, Kevin. And then when he left office, it was 95. Now, it went from there up into the 115s when Biden was in office, and all of a sudden in the last year, for whatever reason, it's dropping precipitously to where it's down in July was 90, and August it just came out as like 86. Now, I'm not going to say any of that. I'm stunned by the numbers, and I was talking to Frank yesterday. Apparently, Frank did one of his PhD papers he started on was on overdoses and heroin overdoses back when it was heroin and all this other stuff. And he was saying the politics involved with defining what's an overdose and what isn't is something you wouldn't even believe. It was like 50 of my pages in the thing. It was all the different definitions of what's really an overdose and what isn't, so they could sort of whoever's in politics at the time can count it as an overdose or not. But I had no idea that I opened up this little trap door and all the stuff is in this cellar. I mean, it's unreal, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it is, and one of the interesting aspects of all of that tracking is what is the scourge du jour? So, you know, I look at it like this. I remember when it was crack. It was crack cocaine, and that was the big thing. Of course, amongst, you know, that was killing people. Cocaine was just creating addicts among the wealthy, you know, in volume.
Yep.
But those were different problems. When Trump came into office, and he was talking about this all through his campaign and when he was in office, it was opioids. So, you know, opioid addiction was a problem probably because of overprescription, but tangentially because people who had, because they were so loose on opioid prescriptions, people whose prescriptions expired then were acquiring opioids on the black market. So we had that problem. Since then, it has really been the fentanyl uptick. So we're dealing with that. And, you know, to more than a certain degree, you're just playing whack-a-mole with the next scourge. I think you have to battle it. I think controlling the borders is one way that's going to help, but it doesn't mean it's going to go away, because we'll come up with some other way for to kill people with
their bicycle. The one the drug is? I'm not, the one where if I drive through the hood, I'll see somebody walking by and it looks like they're 60 when I know they're 25 and all their teeth. Is that OxyContin?
No, that's probably crystal meth.
Crystal meth, okay, I forgot one.
Crystal meth.
Remember we had...
Breaking Bad fans know all about crystal meth.
Well, remember when Eric was on the show, Eric May was the person we're talking about, terrific guy, hopefully we'll get him back. He was a beat reporter for the Washington Post when he first got out of school. And he said he would cover like a couple of murders a week. I thought he said when crystal meth came by, it immediately jumped to like 14 or more than that. And it just, because there were various spots. When we first started the show, Kevin, we did a show on the murder rates in all these cities. And all of a sudden you'd say, geez, what the hell? Why is Jackson, Mississippi all of a sudden, or Elizabeth, New Jersey, where Jan Schumate was from? How do they? Well, they became the hubs of the distribution. And then when they got too hot and too many people were getting killed, they'd move the hub to another place and would go to another city. So it was kind of rotational through these cities as the murders, just like Eric talked about, the murders followed the hubs. But you look at this stuff, but like Frank talked to me for a while yesterday, and he goes, no, I mean, he goes, if somebody's on, you know, crystal meth or something to the point where they can't even really function and they like die that day, is it an overdose or... is it just they just died because they were on the stuff? Or if somebody who never had heroin before and somebody gives them a needle and they take too much and they die that second, you know, like a Belushi thing, well, yeah, that's an overdose.
Belushi was used a lot.
I know, but I'm saying I didn't realize that
probably more like the story around Len Bias.
Yeah, but I had no idea until I talked about that. There's constant fights over what actually counts as an overdose because nobody wants it counted.
Sure, because long-term usage is deteriorating health.
Yeah.
So is that an overdose, or is that you just slowly killed yourself, just like an alcoholic will slowly kill, you know, if not in recovery, if doesn't get to recovery, will slowly kill himself.
But I mean, this.
So yeah, I get what you're saying.
But I mean, when we start talking about 100,000 people a month, what are we doing, Kevin? I mean, God bless. It's 10 times more than I ever thought it was.
Well, and so, you know, so I asked the question. We decry gun violence, and we you know, everybody understands it, but it's really hard to get people on the bandwagon for this stuff. And you know, when we go back to, you know, how what's coming over, we know, you know, we know cartels in some parts of the southern border have taken over, you know, pretty much taken over the turf around there. A lot of people tell you that they're several miles into the U.S. And you can't go there anymore because that's their turf for setting up shop and getting stuff in. So can we stop the flow in the country? Is the problem really about demand in this country more than anything else? Well, it is to a large degree about demand in this country, although lacing things with fentanyl to you know, to give you the impression that you're getting the really good stuff when really what you're getting is fentanyl, and very low doses of fentanyl will kill you. You know, it doesn't take much to get you to overdose territory. So, you know, I kind of see the hypocrisy of the same people who don't want to control the border very much want to control guns. Sitting there going, you got to be consistent. You know, don't talk to me about one unless you're willing to talk to me about the other and what you do about it.
Well, Kevin, I
realize that goes both ways, and I'm a First Amendment person. I realize I'm calling myself out with that as well. But I think, you know, we have to be consistent about what concerns us.
Well, we can't be. My concern with Russell in a minute here, and we'll talk more about this on Friday. And because I really don't think that you know, the people on the show all want to get to the same place, and we argue a little bit about politics. That one of the things that's really bugging me about what's going on right now is, intelligent people are not only, how can I put this, Kevin? They're letting the administration define the problems. We're rolling with that problem, even if it's not really the problem that we want to see, that we want to see addressed. I mean, or not the first problem we want to see addressed. I'm going to say that, you know, Trump has a hair up his behind about the border, which most of us do. There isn't anybody not going to say it's a problem. But to dump the drug part in there, I'm going to say in 2017, I mean, like I said, I was still playing a lot of softball back then. One of the girls on the team, her family had a week-long reunion in the Ozarks of all places, because the middle part of the country. And she's a jogger. Great shape, Kevin. You like looking at her. She would go jogging every morning. And she said, I had to be real careful to not run up the driveway of one of the crystal meth houses or whatever they were, what do they call those things? The crack cocaine plows or whatever. She says you could smell the crap. And how we decide now that the, out of all these people, going back to 2010 and everything long before Trump was in there, out of all these people now, all the villains all just happen to be Canada and Mexico. We had villains here, somehow or another, local sheriff. We never had a president, whether it was Trump or anybody, say, hey, it looks like Buford T. Justice doesn't seem to want to shut down the crack cocaine house in Ozark County, so we're coming in there with a tank if you don't do it. We've never heard anybody even do anything like that in this country, because do they vote for the right people? I mean, we never had, when Timothy McVeigh blasted, you know, how many people did that guy kill? We never said, oh, man, we're going to take a bunch of tanks and we're going to knock down the barbed wire, you know, compounds in Idaho with all these redneck gun guys in there. We're getting the hell out. I mean,
Clinton did some of that, and it kind of blew up in his face.
Oh, the Ruby Ridge thing? Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, how stupid was that, Kevin? They ended up killing all those people. The guy went out jogging every day, and he jogged by the cars that were watching him. All they had to do was open the door and throw him in.
I get it. Look, there's paying attention to it, Tom, and then there's being effective.
But I'm saying I don't want. I mean, I on any kind of an issue, I'm a little disturbed because people. I listened to somebody in Illinois yesterday. And she was, you know, Republican, and she's ranting and raving about all the migrants here. in Chicago. And okay, so last night I spent some time. We at the top of the buses showing up here. Now Chicago's probably not the worst place, so I'm talking about local. At the top, they had 24,000 people that they were housing as migrants. Okay, now the last one of those shelters to shut down was the one by me on December 31st. We're down to 3,000 migrants, and the ones that don't have a job yet are just in the regular shelters that they have for homeless, which is way more than 3,000. So to continually say, is it a problem in Chicago? Probably. But, Kevin, it's not even in our top 25. If you and I were addressing things to do here, we're talking 3,000 people, for God's sake. And they're in other places. The place by me, they all got up and left. The place, the building's all cleaned up. It looks fine. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't a problem, but I don't like the idea that people are trying to define what the problem du jour is, and everybody focuses on, like, that one. And Carl, on this show, one thing we're all unified in, everybody, I'm sure Russell's the same, somehow or another, we have to do something about medical care and those kinds of things. I mean, the idea that when I go visit my buddy, I'm paying that much to park, and it costs me $5 for a thing of coffee in a hospital that doesn't pay any taxes and doesn't even pay a water bill. Kevin, I'd put that in the top five things a problem, rather they would the 3,000 people that are here. That would just be me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there is no hint out of this administration we can do anything with this medical stuff yet. You know, maybe RFK will. I mean,
we'll
I hope
see,
so.
Because I think you're going to get a different look, assuming that Kennedy gets confirmed. And he got out of committee yesterday, so I do think it'll be a squeaker, and they may need Vance's vote to do it, but I think he's probably going to be confirmed. That's going to be a different war path, I think. Whether Trump reins him in, or the Trump administration people rein him in, or somebody reins him in, it's going to be a different war path. But he's already done a lot of exposing the money behind some of the politicians who were grilling him over the last week.
What about his? Anybody in Washington pointing fingers at somebody else for money, good Lord. You mean, right?
No, but, you know, Pfizer money, for example.
Yeah, well, I mean, I
don't think Pfizer's directed a lot of money his way lately.
No, but, you know, I read somebody who was running for office was talking about term limits, which, you know, probably never going to get there. And I was reading a response to that, how so many people now that they identify as future, whatever you want to call them, reps or senators, they're dropping the money they're giving it to state legislative people now, the drug money.
I think there's going to be a lot of issues. So I'm not saying Bobby Kennedy Jr. is going to go fix everything. What I am saying is it's going to be interesting to see how he goes about this.
And
especially interesting to Russell, because we're into his time, and he should jump in and chime in.
Well, the rate of the, what's the place that was giving out the checks, the rate of the Doge rate into this one place they want to shut down. I'm sitting there, I'm reading the articles, Governor, and all they're doing is ranting and raving about these government employees. They didn't get the checks. Somebody told them to write the check to somebody. I mean, why are you firing that guy?
who told you to write a video about trans people for some South American company or something like that? Yeah, I think this is, you know, when we talk about unelected people, this is USAID is one of the big areas where you look, and this is exactly people throwing out money unaccountably. Under the
what makes you think that isn't
the light shining on it, and for in some cases for good cause, and for some cases preposterous cause.
What makes either one of us think that the check they wrote wherever it is going, and everybody's appalled at whichever, wasn't in some bill somewhere?
It might have been.
I
think it's all under the guidance of this Dr. Rhodes guy that we have on the
I'm the one that said write a check to
But I mean, these people, it's like firing all the FBI people.
Gaza for $50 million in condoms.
But I mean, it's like firing all the FBI people that worked on a Trump's case. They were told to work on that. They're employees. What are they gonna do? Say no? I mean,
we fired the people that told them everything to do in the election.
Yeah. Well, What I'm saying, I don't mean Russell knows more about this. I wish I knew more about the government process. I know, not that I ever wanted to work there, but I don't. Doesn't every, let's put it this way, if there's stuff for a railroad station out where you live, Russell, I think that's all spelled out in the, you know, Urban Mass Transit something and something bill, line 58-B is $50,000 for Russell's transit. I don't think you can write the check if it's not in there, can you? Or can you? I don't know.
Well, it depends on the allocation. So I'm going to make this comment, and I'm going to drop off and let you guys go. But it depends, because we have so very much in, maybe over the last 15 to 20 years, have gone this route with the bills, where we pass bills with broad guidance and turn it over to agencies and let them implement it as they see fit.
Okay.
Now, that's a problem. That's Congress ceding its responsibility to the executive branch. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. I think the bill should be specific, which would mean they're either going to have to be 18,000 pages, or they're going to have to do smaller bills, which would be my preference.
I would do that. I'd vote for that, too.
And be very specific about it. And I think that would be better. But yeah, otherwise we turn it over to the bureaucratic side of the house and say go. And you know, the oversight, you know, there are definitely oversight committees in Congress, but they're not effective. And you know, it's just a bad situation. So I think we need to do better in this arena with how specific we are with the instructions to the agencies, and then better oversight to the agencies to start saying, that's crazy. We're not doing that.
Well, before you dash, I want your both of your votes on this one, because we were talking yesterday, and I was with Hal, and Hal, of course, is convinced that, you know, he's very much of a libertarian, free market economist. He's actually, his beliefs are almost right up the behind of Milton Friedman. The two are almost equivalent, for God's sake. Where he would talk about, you know, this
image,
what
bad mental image.
His idea was that is it the function that government can't. I mean, his idea is the less they do, the better off. Yet, if you read stuff from like World War II, not that everybody was perfect. I mean, we had a war going on where people were getting killed, and yet Harry Truman was an absolute dog in Congress on everything the Army spent, making sure that everything they spent was for the right purpose, and not if they spent too much on one thing, his point was you can't spend something on something else, which we also need. Is it the people involved, that the people who are in charge of, you mentioned Congress can't do this stuff. We have had histories, even in wartime, where people in Congress did do this stuff. Is it the structure no good? Or is it the people no good? I think it's the people.
I'm with you on the people. Russell, what do you think?
Sorry, I think the structure kind of sets it up where the people can make decisions but not be accountable for the decisions. And so I think it's a systemic problem that creates a vacuum where people can be no good and start to direct things the way that they want. As opposed to the way things were originally intended.
Well, the generals, according to Marshall, couldn't stand Truman because he would always put their finger to the fire. How much did you idiots pay for these bullets? Did you get a bid? And they didn't. They were like, "What do you mean? We got a war on. We can do whatever we want." And, no, you can't. But I mean, is it? It seems like Congress can do their job if they want to. That's kind of am I wrong?
Ryan, they're supposed to. There are two things that the government does that kind of can impact economic activity. There's and we hear about one of them all the time, which is the Federal Reserve and interest rates and all that fun kind of stuff. The other side of it is the fiscal side, which is the spending side, and that's the side that's out of control. That's the side that's got us in trouble. And that's the side that the elected officials are supposed to be in charge of. And if they make the tough decisions, they don't get reelected. So that's where you got to figure out within that part of the machine, how do we rein them in a bit on the fiscal side? And then if you want to rein them in on the fiscal side a bit, and then all of a sudden, you know, 294 is not getting fixed anymore, and it becomes a nightmare for me to get down to Indiana to teach twice a week. You know, that's part of the trade-offs that end up happening, is all of a sudden the thing that I want from the federal government's not happening. I gripe to my elected official. They don't want to not get reelected, so they go ahead and spend that money. It's the really silly stuff that I do think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in government right now. I read, I don't know if it's true, but that we were allocating $50 million to send condoms to Gaza. They ain't using those.
Well, those at $50 million, they must be really good ones too.
No, apparently not, because
either that, or they're just using them for water balloons to throw at the Israelis.
Well, I did see a picture of a kid's birthday party where they were using them for balloons.
Well, maybe, you know, the what is this?
All right, I gotta go.
You gotta go. And I'm gonna take.
Are you in Bloomington this week?
Me?
Yeah.
No, unfortunately not.
You're not. Okay, because I gotta go down to Bloomington tomorrow, so I'd connect with you. But
okay. Well,
we'll do it another time.
I'll catch you in Northern Indiana at some point for sure.
All right, sounds good.
Maybe they can get these condoms, but now you've driven us down a rat hole here, Russell. Maybe we'll get get these condoms for a discount, because allegedly the best condom maker in the world, I can't believe I read this, is in Japan. And since the Japanese people
I'm so steering away from this right now.
Well, since the Japanese people have decided they literally don't want to have sex anymore. They have to sell those. They have to sell those all overseas because there's not enough demand in Japan for the condoms. You can't make stuff like this up. So maybe we're getting like a real big discount on them and shipping them off to Gaza.
Maybe that's what was going on. I don't know.
But
I found that extremely silly that we were spending.
Well, that's why Russell. I love doing the show and with the people I have on here, because once in a while you have to. I'm still cleaning in my office because I'm not very good at it. Somewhere in here I have a piece of paper that it's an article where they went out and did some kind of survey. Now, you know, whenever you do a survey, you know, you can word it so you get the answer you want, right? Survey was that virtually every American wanted a balanced budget, yet they didn't want entitlements.
You don't want to pay for it.
Entitlements cut, military cut, or anything to do with medical stuff. Well, the problem, again, this is my kind of the theme for the show today. My bitch for Levitt, I don't really want the news media in the show, to be honest with you, ranting and raving about the migrant situation in Chicago when we're down to 3,000 migrants. I mean, it's just not significant.
I don't think it was much of a problem here as it was.
No, I agree.
Because I've been, I go to New York on a semi-regular basis, but probably once every couple months, and they were everywhere.
Yeah, well, how do you?
When you say they were, it sounds like I'm being kind of. I'm just being observational here, but you know, I was there with my kid. And you could see families setting up to spend the night in subway stations, et cetera. And this was Christmas time last year. But they were, you know, there were a lot. I don't know if it was as big a problem in Chicago as it was in New York. But then there are some smaller towns that have been a bit overwhelmed. And then there have been instances, you know, the situation out in Colorado, which one of the things they're hitting initially, there have been some situations where a bunch of bad actors have come over here and set up shop.
I don't deny any of that.
And I feel like that, you know, it's that's not that that's who they're going after right now. They're going after the very obvious people that
we hope
really
so.
Shouldn't be here and aren't here for good, you know, for any good purpose.
And if we can do that, I'm all for it. How could you tell in New York with the massive homeless problem they have, who was a migrant and who was just plain homeless?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Now there's 3,000 people here, migrants that they've tossed into the other homeless shelters. I bet there's 50,000 people or more that are homeless in Chicago. Maybe 100.
I mean, I I would assume if you had a 10 to 15 minute conversation with someone that you could probably figure out where they grew up. Yep. Or at least figure out that they didn't grow up in the United States.
Well, this is kind of my wacky theme, Professor, is that mm-hmm. it's the same thing about when UCLA joins the Big Ten because they want $25 million more of TV money. You know, if you're sitting in a bar and everybody's pouring and say, you have to do it, you have mm-hmm. to do it, you have to do it, until some stupido like me says, well, by the way, what's the budget of UCLA? And it's $11.9 billion.
Yeah,
$20 million doesn't even show up at the board meeting, does it? I mean, or does it? I mean,
it's a line item, man. Maybe. Well, because I mean, it could be a footnote.
I mean, and that's when we bring up these problems with the federal budget, everybody knows, I think, uh-huh. that there's bloat there, right? I mean, it's a government, for God's sake. Plus, and you and I could probably do the DOGE thing. And if we went by and said, this is a duplication of effort, over a period of 3 or 4 years, we could arrange enough people's either retirements or something, where they won't duplicating efforts all over the place. I mean, uh-huh. for God's sake, we got Naval Intelligence, Army Intelligence, NASA, we got NSA, we got CIA, we got the FBI. I mean, even in those areas.
Our business has two regulators.
Yeah.
You know, at least two. And then you could really say, you know, we've got two regulators, but then you also have, you know, regular law enforcement going after our industry periodically. So, you know, that you could say they have three. We have three. There was a running joke a while back within our industry before COVID, really, that we were all going to have an individual regulatory person that followed us around all day.
Well, how many people stand around and watch people trade in the SPX bit now? When it's all electronic, we used to police it ourselves. Because if you did something wrong, you stole money from somebody else, they were pissed off, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, we didn't need anybody standing in the OEX pit. If somebody trades something at a quarter and somebody else was at an eighth, there was hell to pay.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you need a bunch of people? I mean, you did this to me. What if every time you used the bathroom, you had to have somebody observing you and you had to have procedures?
You make sure you read the manual before you go in there.
Yeah, I mean, how could we have built the Golden Gate if every time there was a guy putting the rivets in, there were two guys watching him?
It's funny. It's funny you bring that up because the over-regulation part. You mentioned last week, and I see that you talked to Frank Fahey. It's so funny because he was like looking at my LinkedIn yesterday, and I was going, "I'll bet your chief tracked him down." But we were talking about the Northern Indiana thing, and they're adding a spur to the South Shore Electric that goes down there, and you know we're thinking about moving to that area. That spur, which may open next year, they started it in 2012.
And
the first 4 or 5 years were the environmental impact study.
Don't get me started.
I know, but so do you, you know, and at the opposite end, do you remember when did the early days of COVID that China showed us that they whipped up a hospital in the over the course of about 3 weeks?
You
know how much money you'd have to pay me to live on the top floor of that hospital?
Well,
Because every night you go to sleep, you're going to wonder if it's like a condo building in Florida and it's going to collapse.
Yesterday on a radio, I hear coming in at the, you know, the IC line, the electric line, going south.
Yeah.
That the great ballyhoo at the 103rd Street station is now reopening.
Mm-hmm.
And the 95th Street station is going to be closed to redo. Now, okay, all these cars allow you... Well, some have a trapdoor. You know what the trapdoor is? I don't know if those have a trapdoor or not. The ones we did for Boston did. The trapdoor, when you walk down the steps to get off on the ground, there's this thing on the side. It's this big, corrugated, heavy as shit, metal trapdoor where you can take that thing and stomp on it, and it'll flatten that out. So if you have a platform, you can walk out onto the platform. So you can do either, right? Mm-hmm. So now the IC is going to close the 95th Street station. Now, I got to assume that an awful lot of people either park there or walk there or take their bike there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
and they're going to redo the station. Guess when it's going to open?
Oh, 31?
No, fall of 27. We're talking about a railroad station.
It's still a couple of years.
Now, if it's if it's me and I'm the mayor, and you guys are my consulieres, or the other way around, you the mayor, I'm going to say, hey, Russell, have a news conference. We're stopping this project. Just right now, we're stopping it. Mm-hmm. Until one of those idiots comes into our office, you can do it because you're probably better at it than me. I want to know how many people are working at it. I want to know, are you working Saturdays? Don't give me five people when they feel like it. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, let's hold the project up till you have enough people to go and do this job. I want 30 people working at it. And by the way, do we really need this incredibly huge station with all this stuff, or does it really have to close? Why can't we just get off on this side of the train until the elevators are done? Why do we have to? I mean, what are we doing? I mean, is there any common sense to this at all? How does the mayor not, after this leg of the Kennedy was 3 months overdone, and when you went by there, was never hardly anybody working, how does he not stop this third leg and say, wait a minute, we're not doing this? I want enough people working here where it's a 3 month project, not nine. What are you doing?
I'm going to tell you exactly what happens when a politician tries to do something like that. They lose their job and they end up in jail.
Why?
And my example of that one is Blagojevich, because that's the kind of stuff that he was trying to do as governor, and it was upsetting the folks that had politicians in their pocket and were able to structure projects in a way that maybe just one or two firms got to do the whole project. And Blagojevich got into office, saw what they were doing with the tollways, where they were redoing the toll booths and for electronic tolling, and the plan was going to take maybe a decade or so. And he said, well, why can't we do all of these things at once? And reformulated it like that, and that was the beginning of the end for that guy right there. That really is the thing that he did that upset enough people that they were like, we're going to get you. And they got him.
Well,
And looking back on it, it's easy for him to be out and about now and critical of government, et cetera. But I'd love it if you got him alone in a room and said, would you be willing, would you do all that again, or would you maybe play ball a little bit better and not have your life disrupted for a while? And well, I bet you a part of it would be, you know what, it really wasn't worth it.
Well, I'm for one individual, I'm sure it's not worth it. I mean, look what happened to Elliot Spitzer, for God's sake.
Yeah.
But at some point, are you, I know you're in happy suburbia, but do you ever use LaGrange Road to go south?
Yeah.
Well, that one side of the bridge they rebuilt, what was that, a 5-year project? Now I go out there.
Yeah.
I go out there every week. Well, not every week, but every other week to see chiropractor. Does a good job. The guy who advertises on the show. Russell, I've gone by there 50 times where there were 3 people working, 5 people working. How do you work from home when you're a construction worker, for God's sake?
You don't work from home. Well, if you're working from home as a construction worker, you're getting paid for a no-show job.
I'm not saying that they got paid, but I'm saying but there was nobody there.
What did
the bid look like? I mean, we're gonna do this over a certain period of time. It's gonna take us 5 years. What do you mean 5 years? You know how long it took to build Hoover Dam? Like 3.5 years. How the hell?
And that's a big thing.
Yeah. I think the Golden Gate was like 3 years, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not even.
Know, and here's the upside. I'm playing advocate because I don't. You know, I'm part of the camp that stuff happens and everything can't be perfect. How many people died doing the Hoover Dam?
Actually, not very many, and nobody's buried in that.
I think it was like I feel like it was just the number 11 pops.
No,
in my
it was
mind
it was more than
that.
It was more than that. It was like 90. Okay.
So, and same thing with the Golden Gate Bridge. They have a memorial for the Golden Gate Bridge for the people that died putting it up.
You know, that's funny. Funny you should ask that. But, Golden Gate Bridge, they made it through like 95% of the construction with nobody dying.
And, wow.
And near the end, the people were working on the actual, what do you call it, the pavement.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or another, was it like 12 or 15 people fell into the net because they had nets under it. And the net gave way. But it was near the end of the project. They made it pretty much the whole way. But you know what they did have is when they were putting the all those towers are done by rivets.
Uh-huh.
Right, and when they first started, there was something on the metal. See, I know some of this stuff. I'm so interested in this kind of crap. There was something on the metal, on the rivets, or on the metal itself, that when you heated it up, it gave off some kind of a gas. And all these people were getting sick as hell with this gas until they figured out what it was. But I don't know that anybody ever died from it. Now, whether they died 3 years later because of it, you know, that, you never know about that in those days.
Yeah.
But no, that was a big issue with that. Now, in Hoover Dam, all the people that were that inside when they were drilling the tunnels, they were going in and out with you know, essentially machines that were not, let's say they didn't have a catalytic converter on them. Is that a fair way to say it? So the carbon monoxide in there, people were getting levels of carbon monoxide. I don't think anybody ever died from it, but I don't know about that 5 years from now if you all of a sudden don't have a problem with that. I mean, some of this stuff is pretty lingering, right? It was dangerous work. Now, the Transcontinental Railroad took like 3.5 years to build. Well, you had hundreds of people, and especially on the western side, you know, the Asian people that were these guys, you know, you're interested in this, so I'll say this for a second. If you ever see pictures of how they built Hoover Dam, for those that don't know, the first thing you did is essentially cut four huge tunnels through the mountains around where the dam is. And then you built two cofferdams, so you essentially forced the river into the mountains to flow for the 3 years it took to build the dam. And then you let it come up over the cofferdam, and now the real dam is holding it back. And those tunnels became all the pipelines for the electricity. That's where water actually flows through the tunnels now, through a pipe, and that's how you get the electricity and all that other kind of good stuff. But when they were drilling this thing, they had this big, huge, honking apparatus that would run up there. Was the size of maybe, the tunnel's got to be like 20 feet maybe. So this thing is, say, 20 foot in circumference. It has maybe 100, maybe, drills there, and it's hooked up to a power supply. And it drills 100 holes into the rock, about the length of a stick of dynamite. And sure enough, they put 100 sticks of dynamite in there. Get the hell out, set it off, and it basically got you. I think what did they say? It got you like a foot and a half or something. That's all it got you, or 2 feet. Then you'd have to do it all over again. And this was like for a mile or more. These tunnels were that long. Well, when they did the tunnels for the railroad, dynamite hadn't been invented yet, most of these poor Chinese dudes are used. Yeah. Plus, they didn't have the automatic drills, so they were drilling these holes by hand, and actually stuffing them with black powder by hand, and then they'd leave, set off the black powder. Sometimes it didn't even move the rock, and they'd have to do it all over again. I mean, it wasn't like you knew every time you're getting a foot and a half or two. As bad as that sounds, these poor guys. They're working in there, and nobody cared about the air. Nobody cared about them.
No.
And if there was a snow slide, and you lost 40 guys, so what? There's another 40 waiting for a job. Well, maybe we'll pick up the bodies in the spring. I mean, it was brutal for people.
No, absolutely. And that's an extreme that we don't want.
No, God no.
But I do think that there is, you know, that there. This sounds so callous and terrible. But there's a happy medium in there between getting things done in safety.
Well, I think
you know what I mean. And on the other side, you know, and we would never know if this is true. I might be completely making stuff up. You can't tell me that if you built a full hospital in 90 days that somebody didn't get hurt.
Well, it depends on what you define as a hospital. I mean you could put, if you and I had a problem with people living in a hospital, and say we got a piece of property, and we wanted to house homeless or migrants or whatever, for whatever reason. But what would we want? We'd want a place that had a school, where it had showers and a cafeteria. We could build. How long did it take the Army to put up a Butler building in the war? Like 4 days? Those things last forever. We could put 10 of those things up while we're building the hospital building, and those things can be secure and be sterile, right?
I've got a theory on what's going to change all of this. You ready?
Well, come on. You want to do it after break?
But remind me, I got a great theory on who's going to fix America.
You got all kinds of great. Why are we?
And it's not Donald Trump.
Is it somebody from the show? Is it you?
No, it's not from the show. You'd never guess it.
Oh God! All right. Well,
I know, but I'm going to tell you, it's going to fix America.
Is it a female?
You know what? Go to break. I'm not going to tell you until I get back.
Oh God. Okay. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Lower run face Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howard. Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 24. NASDAQ futures down 152. Dow futures down 96. And this is because of, we have AMD down almost 12 bucks now, which is pushing 10%. We have Google down 15, which is their low at 7.5%. Again, both of them blew through the straddles. That Uber's down as well. So everything that was Uber's down 5%. So not as horrible there. It's down 378 to 65.91. But the earnings last night were generally not so hot. How was that for a technical term? Not so hot. DAX down 1. Call that flat. FTSE up 21.2%. CAC around down 16.2%. So Europe is kind of a nothing here this morning. Asia, Nikkei up 33. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 192.9%. Still over 20,000 though. 20,597. Shanghai finally open after the Lunar New Year. I'm not the Chinese New Year, sorry. Shanghai down 21. 32.29. Bonds. We have the bonds down 6 basis points, 4.46. The bund down 5 basis points, 2.34. Japan unchanged, 1.28. Oil, which we thought was doing a breakout here in the mid-70s, now it's back down to 71.86, so much for the breakout, at least now. It's down 84 cents. Brent down 89 cents, 75.31. Natural gas down 5 cents, 3.20. RBOB down 2 cents, 2.06. We have gold continuing to come up here, down up 13 bucks, 1330, 2889, pushing towards 2900. Silver down 12 cents, 3290, which is interesting because the SLV ETF is actually up on the day, so a little bit of a difference going on there. FX, dollar is weakening here. Pound back, the pound is back over 125, 125.25, the euro 104. I think it made it down under 103, as I recall. So, he's talking 1.5% moves in currency is a big deal. I mean, you've never traded them. You don't realize how big of a deal it is, but it is. Bitcoin down 77 bucks, 98,614. Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
All right. It is 7:37 here in Chicago. Just a little bit of sports. The Bulls have won over the Heat yesterday, as 133 over 124. Over to Chicago weather, it is going to be pretty weird throughout the day. It's going to be 27 degrees, thankfully not too breezy, but clouds are going to stick around throughout the day, and those clouds are going to bring in some freezing rain throughout basically the whole night, which is going to lead to some winter weather advisories starting later today. So we're going to have a high of 34, but that freezing rain is going to be causing a lot of slippage on the roads. Be careful with driving. Over to Phoenix, they're currently at 54 degrees. They're going to have a pretty warm and sunny day with sunshine and a high of 79. Finally, for Chicago traffic, things have built up pretty heavily on the inbound expressways. But if you're on the Kennedy, there's an accident just before Lake Street, just reported about 5 minutes ago. It says, wow, expect delays up to 2 hours. That is the most I think I've ever seen on a delay like that. So
what is the accident? 15 cars or what?
Not sure. It looks like I'll do a little bit more searching here, but all I got is that it was an accident about 7 minutes ago.
Whoa.
Nope, that's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, I'm not looking to change the world on the Rod Blagojevich thing. I'm not trying to throw the three construction companies out. I would just say, okay, how many jobs do you guys have? Well, we've got five.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, concentrate on the other four. Let's push the Kennedy off here. That's all I'm asking.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you change topics.
No. But now I want you to let me know who's going to lead us out of the wilderness.
They've been in discussions, and they've become politically active for the first time and may be partially responsible for Trump getting reelected. It is the Amish. They have volunteered to go down to North Carolina because nothing has been rebuilt since the hurricane 6 months ago. It's just there. They really haven't done anything yet. And the Amish said, if you want our help, we'll go down there and help rebuild. They'll rebuild North Carolina in about 4 or 5 days, and then they'll go back to their regular lives.
Don't say anything.
Really, the Amish have said that they would, that they're like, if we know how to build stuff.
That
should terrify construction companies.
Don't tell people where the Amish are going to be. Don't tell dog lovers that.
Why?
Because they don't like the Amish because they run puppy mills.
The Amish run puppy mills?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And they make furniture, too.
Yeah, I know. And there were people.
The cool thing is we could just totally make fun of the Amish, and they don't listen to the radio.
I think some listen to the show.
I think they do. They do. I know.
Honestly. The by the way, one of my buddies, you've met him, Monty is Mennonite or whatever, and he says the amount. There's all these different. I use the term sex. I've learned a lot of it from him. He goes, but the bishops. There's no like pope. I don't think the bishops have an amazing amount of authority to change the rules. Like in one area, you can't ride in a car, but you can take the train. Another area, you can ride in a car. They're all different in terms of what you can do and what you can't do. But you know, people on the south side, the horse people, because Audrey would love to be again a horse person. They would get a horse trailer with like 5-6 horses on there. They'd haul them down to Amish company because they have the best blacksmiths. They get all the horses, shoot and bring them back to Chicago.
And that's a lot of effort.
Yeah, well, you know what?
I mean, they must be damn good at what they do because that's a lot of effort.
Oh, God, yeah. And,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think you and I are ready to be a blacksmith, but hey, a bunch of questions for you in terms of the valuations in the market here because I want to make sure where we are, stocks and jacks here. Google, down $15. It is struggling, it appears, to be still considered a growth company. P is down to 38. Now, Palantir, who everybody was gushing over yesterday that the thing is the biggest growth company on earth, they're at like 180 or something, their PE, or 170, somewhere in there. Now, is Google now just another search engine where we should just value them at that, almost like a retailer, and 38's fine, or is it a buy? I mean, how can you tell what people view?
Yeah, Google's a nightmare to try and value because... If you're a tech startup and you've got a really cool niche product and you're looking around for money, Google will fund you, but then they'll suck you into the company. And they're like a huge portfolio. They're not just a search engine. They're a huge portfolio of companies.
But why all of a sudden are they, say, investing-wise, out of favor? Because anybody now is a 38. I forgot to say, Home Depot's got hired at 38, and so does Costco. We're talking about retailers. Are they being, right now I would say, of course you don't want to say this about the market, they're being valued as a retailer. Is that fair that they're not this innovative company anymore? Maybe if it isn't, I might want to buy some. In other words, what I'm saying here.
Well, it's not so much that they're not an innovative company, but what does it take to move the needle on a company that's worth almost $1 trillion?
Well, they're worth less this morning.
You can't necessarily think of it in terms of share price. It's just more of, if you've got a $100 million company,
and you own a share, you own shares in it, it's not as a heavy lift for them to increase the value of the company by 50% as it is for a behemoth type company. So you've got a size factor that gets in there valuation wise, and it's not necessarily that they're being valued, you know, as a retailer, but it's more of they're being valued, they should be given a lower valuation because their long-term growth prospects are not as strong as some other companies. The overall stock market is going into 2025 is extremely overvalued. And we've talked about, you know, what does it take to get corrections, etc. It takes things need to be expensive, so we're there. And then it takes something, you know, it takes a little spark, and you know, the tariff type stuff and the economic disruptions we're probably going to experience with some of this, that could be the spark that gets things going to the downside. In order to achieve even higher valuations, you got to have better long-term fundamentals, and than's being priced in right now, and it just feels like everything's being very much priced to perfection.
All right, these guys have 13.3 billion shares outstanding, so mm-hmm. being down $15 is a solid, Jesus, what's 13 times 15? $160 billion of market cap they're losing today, right?
It's actually 20.
Okay. You're right. So 20 billion. 200, yeah. But no, 200 billion in market cap, right?
Well, 200, but yeah, it's, yeah.
So that's a lot. It's
used to be a lot.
What gets me to the most interesting thing about the show and talking to you guys, is mm-hmm. you lead me to subjects that I have to go do some research on. And the minute I do, I'm stunned by what I find. I'm like, how could I make it this far and not know all this crap? Like, the stuff about how many, earlier we were talking about how many overdoses a month. I had no idea it was that money. I mean, I just, mm-hmm. I don't know, where do I live in a vacuum? But I'm looking at this. I dug back. Did I send you that really neat, it's an active page where you can go back every year. I sent it to you like last week. Mm-hmm. The biggest stocks and how much they're valued. Right.
Oh yeah.
But you go year to year, and the thing moves. All the graphs start moving. All the companies' names start changing.
Yeah.
And one day, what? NVIDIA was down. What was it $600 billion? Right. Not NVIDIA. Yeah. NVIDIA was down $600 billion. What was it? 5 years ago, there were only three companies that were worth more than $600 billion.
Worth that much? I know. We hear about among people the. You know, the wealth dispersion, that, you know, the rich have gotten a lot richer, and then everybody else has just kind of trudged along. That, I think that's happened with companies as well.
Yeah.
That you've really seen the large cap companies, and I don't know if it's reversible.
Well, let me ask you this.
And I think that the advantages they have are so ridiculous compared to, trying to be a startup company. Like I said, if somebody's got a cool technology that Google could utilize or threatens Google, they buy it.
They'd buy it, or the government would somehow muscle them out.
Yeah, we've got these, you know, Elon Musk, Zuckerberg, you know, the guys that were at the inauguration that. They've built themselves up to a point where, it's going to take the government doing something to rein that in. Didn't we go through that like about 100 years ago?
Well, you know, I think it comes down to people, Russell. I mean, even though there's going to be somebody that says, "Oh, look at all the NIL money. Oh, guys are always getting a little bit on the side." Oh, okay, but you're not talking about the same planet. Did politicians always get campaign donations? Probably, of some kind. Well, sure they did. Did you have five captains of industry with bare face run down to the year Harry Truman was elected, or Eisenhower, run up to them with a bare-faced million-dollar check and say, "Here"? I mean, the idea that you would have the balls to do that in the open is stunning to me. It's stunning to me.
Yeah.
Well, I have a very technical question here, though, regarding Google. I'm looking at this. Again, every time you look up, Russell, you're fine. They bought back 2% of their stock last year, 3.2% the year before, and 3% the year before that. Why? What is this urge to buy all the stock back? I mean, wasn't it 15 years ago you couldn't buy your stock back? It was illegal, right?
I think it was. You got to go farther
back.
Than 20 years,
maybe?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, what do you make of that? I mean, at the end of the day, what if Google someday is $50 and you and I are Google shareholders and we walk in and go, let me get these straight. You idiots bought 20% of the company back at 220 and now it's 40? I mean, what manner of morons are you guys? What's the point? Why not just give a dividend?
Well, the reason it's the tax implications, and there are a lot of investors that would prefer that they buy shares back as opposed to pay dividends, because you get unrealized capital gains that go along with the shares being repurchased.
Yeah, but the shareholders, this is the part I don't get. People will say, and I don't know what you say in your classroom, so please give me an F or an A, whatever. You'll hear people say, we're giving money back to shareholders because we're buying our stock back. You're giving money to people who don't want to be shareholders anymore. Or what am I missing here? How does that help me as a shareholder?
It reduces the number of shares outstanding.
But if you overpay for it, it's just a horse bleep trade, like if I did it for one of my clients.
Well, right? It's still, again, it's the alternative is, well, there are two alternatives. One alternative is they hang on to the cash and they don't really have anything to do with it.
Well, you could pay a dividend.
Or that's the other alternative. And, you know, maybe their shareholder base doesn't want that.
Well,
honestly, that is a question for the shareholder base. Well, and if, because they are the owners of the company, and through the board of directors, they should dictate dividend policy. And if all of a sudden, investors favor dividend paying stocks, then the market forces might change the way that Google goes about doing things. But that's what in my mind, that's what the shareholders want.
Well, okay, now when you say shareholders,
if they didn't want it, they can, it sounds very basic, but if they didn't want to be involved in a company that's buying back shares and more about capital gains than dividends, there are plenty of other alternatives for them to invest in.
Well, if it comes down to what time of our investment lifetime are we talking about?
Yeah.
If the stock is going to go up 2% a month, you don't care about the dividends, right? You'd rather have the capital gains. But that's been a recent phenomenon. I mean, if all of a sudden Tesla crashes and burns, and I'm not saying it's going to, but if all of a sudden the thing's trading $50 someday and you find out that Musk sold 90 bazillion shares at 500, how are you not pissed off?
Well, you would know it as well that he had sold a bunch of shares.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this,
and that's another part of it. You know, that's another piece to it, is we can see what the owners are doing.
Well, let me ask you this:
or what management is doing? We can see it close to real time.
If you and I have 1,000 shares of Google, and we wouldn't mind a check once in a while, rather than say we would say we're total Luddites, we wouldn't mind a check. Now we're the shareholders; we might be able to say, we would like a dividend if you don't have any other use for the money. And Microsoft has an amazing amount of cash that they're obviously not using, which means they don't need, right? Or else, because they're not using it. I mean, granted, if you're going to invest it, it's one thing. But I'm thinking the people who are doing the voting, Russell, are not people who own the shares. They own stock options for the shares, the board members and the management at the top.
That's very possible.
So if my share strike price for Google is 225 and it's trading at 193, and you want me to toss out a $2 dividend, you just dropped a stink bomb in the boardroom, and nobody wants that,
right?
Because now all of a sudden my stock option's worth nothing, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think those are the people that are controlling the vote and not the quote shareholders. That is kind of my long way of saying this.
Well, if the ultimate owners of the company, the shareholders, who really are just big companies in their own right, If they want it done differently, they can force it to be done differently, or they can go elsewhere. It's not like we live in the United States and we've got to pay taxes because we're a citizen of the United States. We don't have to invest in companies that don't, you know, that don't pay dividends and only because are shooting for growth. We do have alternatives. We can always invest in Coca-Cola and get our dividend check.
I agree.
Four times a year or twice a year, however often they pay their dividends.
Well, I'm with you. When the markets are going up all the time,
mm-hmm.
you get a mental view of how things should be done. And if all of a sudden they don't, and it's a period of 20 years you've owned some company, God, they made all this money every year. Stock hasn't changed since I got in here. And oh, by the way, where's this all this money going? We get this. If you and I were to invest, if we're going to be like the goofballs on the Shark Tank, I think that our investment would be, the Chief Russell, we're going to give you guys $1 million. If you and I had $1 million to piss away, we're going to give you guys $1 million. When are you going to be making $100,000 a year on my $1 million? And when are you going to start sending me a check for $40,000? I mean, that's what we're looking for. I mean, at some point, not tomorrow.
What's your exit?
Yeah, I mean, at some point, it's like, well, we're never going to send you anything. Okay, we're gonna come up with the next idea and spend it on that. Well, what if I don't like that idea? Well, tough luck. I mean, but the management, I think, has been getting away with this for a while. Now, I'd be if Google continues to. When I say have negative, not negative, but less than optimistic views of their future, which in today's world, a 38 PE gives me a clue. And if someday stock's 125, and if you and I were in the boardroom, I would say, by the way, how many shares did you guys buy over 200? It'd be like me managing your money. Say, well, how many shares IBM did you buy at 240? The thing's trading 40. What kind of a trade was that? It's the same trade, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
No, absolutely.
Another thing I want to ask you, we don't have that much time, but when are you going to have all kinds of questions regarding tariffs when you get back to class? I imagine you will, right?
No, nobody's brought that up.
Well, after this...
No, I've been in the classroom for about 3 weeks now. Nobody's brought that up at all.
How do you...
Not even among like the little hallway conversations we have about the markets, et cetera. The only person that brought it up was one of the guys in the economics department. He asked me how to go about speculating that interest rates aren't going to come down as fast, based on the tariff thing.
Okay, your basic tariff stuff, and I thought maybe you'd actually, you may end up having to explain this to people, I would guess, but your basic tariff stuff. All the examples that I had through Notre Dame and University of Chicago was what happens. I mean, you're obviously everything in economics is a curve, so you can't just say exactly where it's going to be, right? You got to see how it's going to react. But the classic examples always were, okay, Mercedes puts a tariff. We put a tariff on Mercedes's. Now, of course, this is before Mercedes's might be assembled here, which adds quite a wrinkle that wasn't around when I was in school, right? So. The Mercedes is, you put, Mercedes is $50,000, you put a $5,000 tariff on it. Right, so the price, somebody has to pay $5,000, so you would think the price would go to 55, but it really doesn't, because Mercedes might say, well, we still got to, if we're going to sell anything over there, we got to be somewhat competitive, so we'll eat $3,000, so we'll only be up two. So now, if the competitor is Cadillac, say, or Lincoln, they're going to say, wow, the Mercedes is now $2,000 higher. We can raise our car price $1,000 and still be the better choice.
Still be competitive, maybe even
a little more competitive. So all these prices are going to kind of move around. It's not as simple as saying, okay, the Mercedes that was 50 is now just going to be flat out 55 and that's it. Because it's way more complicated than that. But the wrinkles since my days in college are, wait a minute, the Mercedes might actually be assembled here. And oh, by the way, the Chevy trucks assembled in Canada are not roadsmobiles made in Canada, they're friggin' Chevys that are owned here. That maybe the transmissions go up there and then come back. The complexity of these things to me seems gotten way more complex, and I'm not even sure I could work it all the way through. And
give anybody you can tell a really good short story depending on your politics and whether you approve of the guy in office right now. You can make an argument that tariffs are good or tariffs are bad. You really can't. You truly, truly can.
But they're not the same tariffs that you and I grew up with. They're not
exactly
because the people I asked we had a bunch of our guys doing our booze clatch last week, and these are all intelligent guys. And I said, so why are we doing this? And he's doing it because our trade deficit is here. I said, do you think Trump even knows? Or I'm going to ask you guys. Not insult. Do we even know what the current account deficit is? And they look at me like I had four heads, and they go, no. I said, well, if General Motors goes to Canada and makes cars there and imports them here, okay, so we have a trade deficit, but if the money they make from Canada is repatriated here in cash, so because your exchange rate, and if it's a floating exchange rate, the pluses and minuses always have to match, right? Isn't that the idea? So what if we own all the factories in Canada, and even though we have a trade deficit, we have a current account, we're equal? They looked at me like I had four heads. If your current account is even, what difference does it make, the trade deficit?
It shouldn't. It really shouldn't.
I mean, obviously, you'd like to have the people employed here versus there, but still, there might actually be no deficit at all, right?
Yeah, no, I have yet to get a truly clear handle on why we chose to do this. I felt like the tariffs on Mexico partially were to kind of force their hand into helping us with the immigration situation.
I would agree.
People start in southern Mexico, and Mexico helps them get to doesn't stop them. And the reason they doesn't stop them coming into their country is because they're on their way to another country, and so they're cool with that part. So they haven't been helping us with that, and that really is why I thought we were going after Mexico with tariffs, because that's one of the things that we have in our arsenal. I don't really know what we're upset with Canada about at all.
I think it's trade deficit.
It's the trade deficit part.
Yeah, Trump is focused. Yeah, he wasn't in his last term. Anytime there's a trade deficit, he thinks we're losing money.
We're being
to
ripped off.
Yeah,
yeah. And then I thought China was a nice surprise in there.
Yeah,
if you want to get into office and you're upset about the world taking advantage of us, which it seems like that's kind of the core theme here. I'm more upset about the bad actors around the world that we send $10, $20, $100 million to a year in foreign aid to help them run their country. And I feel like, the farmer that gets paid by the federal government not to plant their crops, kind of becomes kind of a lazy type farmer and is not particularly self-sufficient. I wonder if we have created, and this, honest to God, is a thought that I have had while we've been talking. I never thought this before, but I wonder if we are basically creating a bunch of non-farming farmers around the world, because the biggest industry in some countries is how to spend the American aid each year. Well, and if all of a sudden you're not getting it, you're going to look around and figure out, okay, how are we going to make some money? And that may be the best tough love that some countries need.
How in this world of politics can you even have that conversation? You would think that there would be some sober minds on both sides of the aisle where we could put them in a couple of limousines, it's got to go down to Camp David, have a nice glass of wine and say, okay, let's pick on this problem for like an afternoon and see what we can do about it. We're out of time here, but you're my expert. I didn't get to this one. I wanted to ask you about the China situation. I mean, if you throw a bunch of tariffs on China, well, okay. Suppose you totally screw these guys, which obviously they. They're huge investors in our bonds here. We got all kinds of people that have investments over there that aren't going to get paid. All this stuff is so much stickier.
Dude, the people that have invested money in China, I know somebody that was running a small business, and they were going to China twice a year, and holding classes on options, et cetera. I went along a couple of times and did them with them, and the Chinese government would allow him to pull out what his expenses were to come over and teach the classes, but the profits had to stay in an account over there.
Whoa.
And they're still there, and he hasn't done a class in 10 years. He can't get his money out. Anybody that's invested in China, this isn't going to make that bad situation worse. It just isn't. They haven't been playing on it. Has not been a fair playing field. I don't understand why. Say, and this, there's a professor I ride back and forth to Indiana with, and we were both talking about this the other day. I mean, if you try to start doing business in China and you get ripped off and you don't make any money, it's your own damn fault, because it's just been a pattern that's been going on for some time. Well, they don't play fair. I think businesses are blinded by, well, there's 1.2 billion people over there that we could sell stuff to. No, there's not. 900 million of them can't afford anything.
1.2 billion Cokes per day.
They're a country about the size of our country.
1.2 billion Cokes per day.
There are people that can't afford.
I know.
Half that country can't afford to buy a Coke.
Well, it's, Russell, talk at you next week. When are you back? Are you staying this in town on President's Day week, or are you still?
I don't know, man. I gotta. Oh, you mean President's Day weekend?
Yeah.
I don't know yet. I think the Rhodes family might go to New York, but I'm not sure.
Well, who do you like Sunday?
Who do I? I want lots of injuries and nobody to watch.
Oh God.
No, really, it's very difficult to like either of these teams.
What are your chances of?
I mean, Kansas City's going to win it. You know, it's just too much of it's too much of a great story. Mahomes, now is he the GOAT or not? You know, the tight end is you know, dating the geeky girl from high school that turned out to be the bomb. You know, it's just so much of a story.
Well, you know, you can bet on him proposing after the game.
Oh yeah, that's the movie part. We'll see that happen.
Well, you know, you can't make that bet in Illinois. We have rules here.
You can't bet on
bet on, what do they call those, prop bets that are defined, can be controlled by only one person.
You know what? I bet you I can find somebody to take that.
Oh, sure you can. Sure you can. But I was reading them the other night to my guys, and it says you can't bet on whether or not the first play is going to be a pass or a run, because if that's a bet, somebody could. You can't bet on the coin flip decision. You can't bet on a field goal.
You can. I think we can't bet on the coin flip, but most people can.
However they define it, there's like nine of them. Whatever is it, like a you can't bet on injuries because somebody could fake an injury. Whatever one person can do, you can't bet on.
Mm.
So there.
I was not aware of that.
I'll read them for you next week. You take care of yourself, bud. S&P futures down 20, right where we've been all morning. Again, this is Alphabet and AMD. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.